Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. 30 years ago, AIDS patients hid their disease and often struggled toward an often quick death, often alone, a function of fear and suspicion fueled by ignorance. A lot has changed. We know so much more. For one, people diagnosed with HIV or AIDS no longer face an imminent death sentence, but social, financial, and medical constraints still threaten the ability for many to get proper treatment for the condition. Last year, AIDS Resource Center Ohio merged with the Columbus AIDS Task Force to form a nonprofit community group that works to prevent the spread of HIV and improve treatment through testing, advocacy, and support services, all in the same place. Tonight, ARC Ohio's Medical Center celebrates the opening of their new medical center and pharmacy, a first in Ohio where free testing, primary and specialized care, mental health counseling, housing assistance, and more will be found under one roof in the Short North. Joining us now to talk about how far we have come as a society at large and in the state of Ohio and how far we have to go is Bonnie Harnish. She's a registered nurse and quality and medical coordinator at ARC Ohio. Welcome to the show, Bonnie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Also joining us is Tyler Termeer. He's an ARC client and also an employee there. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Thanks, Dan.
To our listeners, did you lose someone in the old days? Remember the old days when AIDS made them a pariah? Give us a call and tell us your story because it's good to remember what things were like so that we don't ever go back to that way again. So, Bonnie, first of all, give us a snapshot of what this medical center is going to look like and, you know, what we'll find under that one roof tonight at the ribbon cutting ceremony.
Well, it's a brand new facility or it's newly decorated. And so everything looks modern. All the equipment is brand new. There's bright colors. It's built in a U-shape so that in one corner you find mental health therapists and another corner you find the examining rooms that you might expect to see. In another corner, you find case managers who are hard at work, and everybody is working together with the office, other offices that we have where housing services are available. And so the patient just comes in, and there's a receptionist who's from, we've already gotten very attached to, from Zimbabwe, Keith, and the patient comes in and waits there and is directed all the way around and to all the providers.
The idea of this, putting all of these different services that affect one particular group of people, that's not unique to the AIDS issue or in the HIV/AIDS community. That's something that's coming to be seen as a good idea for a lot of different conditions.
That's very true, particularly all the chronic conditions. And I have to say that the community has taken good care of people with HIV with the funding that they've had. And that the wraparound has been the community wrapping around the patient. But the newness here is for a patient to be able to stand in one place and be able to look over there and get the pharmacy, get the prescriptions filled, and do everything in the same place in the same day, and to walk off the street downtown Columbus and get the care they need. And I think it's a chronic illness that needs the practitioners to approach from all sides.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on Thanks for that takeaway,
yeah.
Bonnie. All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guests are Bonnie Harnish, registered nurse, quality and medical coordinator at ARC Ohio. They're opening up their new medical center tonight in the Short North. For more information, we'll have a link for you on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Also with us is Tyler Termeer. He's an ARC client and also an employee. And Tyler, welcome again to the show.
Thank you.
So what do you do at ARC?
So I am the director of the Ohio AIDS Coalition, which is actually the third organization that merged with AIDS Resource Center Ohio last year. And we are the public policy and advocacy division of ARC Ohio. So mm-hmm. we're providing education and leadership opportunities for both health professionals and case managers, as well as people living with HIV across the state of Ohio.
So what exactly do you do, though? When someone comes into the medical center, what will you do with them?
So our role with the new medical center will be providing education around the disease that they're currently living with, around other comorbidities of the disease. So now, as HIV is progress to a more long-term chronic illness, where once a death sentence, as you mentioned, now we're dealing with HIV and cancer, HIV and diabetes, HIV and heart disease. So we want to make sure that clients understand the disease that they're living with, the side effects that may come with each of those comorbidities, but also have the tools and resources to advocate for and self-assess the best standard of care that they should be receiving, which we're hoping to be able to offer at ARC.
It's got to be pretty exciting opening up this center tonight, right? Bonnie, you were telling me earlier that, you know, there's a whole range of people that are going to use this center for one reason or another. And you told me one of your clients has been living with AIDS or HIV since, I think, 1987?
That's right. And it's really something to take care of a patient who has suffered with it all that time. They have things to teach you about how to stand it, how to get through their lives. But we have more and more medicine to help their lives go better and last longer. And so that's exciting for a medical person to have, to be able to do something is really important. But it's quite something to know somebody who's lived with it that long.
It's such a moving target, too. As you said, Tyler, it's a chronic condition that is coupled with lots of other illnesses by virtue of the fact that you live with it now instead of die from it necessarily. But let's get a snapshot of HIV/AIDS today. It's still surprising how many people are being infected by it for people who don't know. Can you talk about that, Bonnie?
Well, one of the more disappointing things is that Ohio is now considered 25th in the country for new infections. And last year, we were 21st in the country. And another statistic that's kind of disturbing for 2012 is that only maybe 30%, 28% of people who have HIV are under good care and are being monitored closely and are on medications that are the best medications for them, because those change. That's a moving target also. And so we have to realize as a medical community that we're missing the boat somewhere. There are barriers to care that we have not solved yet. And that's one of the efforts for the clinic is to try and bring in people who may have had HIV for some time but are not under good care now.
It's surprising, too. I read in the Dispatch this morning, Bill Hardy, the president and CEO of ARC Ohio, said that there is a new infection in Columbus every 22 hours, yeah, which is shocking in this day and age. And to what do you attribute that? That not enough people are getting tested still, or what?
Well, I'm not the best person to answer that, but I can tell you that young people are a contributor to this fast pace of infections, and I think that education is got to be the key piece that we're missing.
Young people who didn't necessarily live through the horrible beginning stages of this, where people were just dying in droves and we didn't understand anything about it. Is that what you think it is, Tyler?
Yeah, I think 30 plus years into an epidemic, we're in a new era where people can take one pill once a day, right before they go to bed, with very minimal side effects. And you have a new generation, a new face of the epidemic who has never lived a day where they saw their peers sick and dying from this disease. So, you know, I think that there are young people who don't understand the severity of the disease, or feel as though even if they are infected, that it's an easy road ahead because it's now a manageable disease. And then we have a population as well that has aged with HIV. They've survived, and they know that they're now going to be able to live a long and manageable life with HIV. So I think we have two populations, a soaring new epidemic among young people who are living with HIV across Ohio, but also this aging population who either has survived and has been living with HIV and now is managing these other comorbidities, or an older population that didn't necessarily feel as though they would be at high risk for HIV and associate safer sex practices with getting pregnant. And so they don't necessarily practice safer sex in the same ways as older Americans may often do. And we've begun to see a surge among that group as well.
And there's ethnic, is cultural problems too, obviously, because you can look at the numbers and see race must, you know, what is it? Ohio is composed of 88 counties. Diagnosis of HIV infection in Ohio in 2008, 52% were females 25 to 44. And I'm wondering, that's a huge percentage. Is that, and wondered why, is that because of IV drug use? Is it because of heterosexual sex? Where is it coming from?
And the answer to that is yes. But the answer is that we're not eliminating the right barriers, because there is a racial disparity about people who get HIV, and it's also a disparity about the effectiveness of treatment. And I think that maybe the complexity of some lives and the barriers, other barriers that have to be met, the crossroads of HIV and poverty are a piece of the story. IV drug use is not the most frequent.
I was surprised that it wasn't more involved, mm-hmm. and it's not.
It's really not. However, I think that in the next few, we also don't have a lot of data around injection drug users. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing that we'll begin to see, especially here in Ohio, we've begun to see a lot more heroin use within the state, and people are injecting in a much more frequent rate than we have been able to monitor in the past. So while our data right now doesn't capture that population, I think we'll begin to see that. And also, in terms of race, I would say that I think that we're really dealing with a disease that is not just here in Ohio, but across our country, truly impacting those communities who are most marginalized, and those communities that may not actively seek health care in general, okay. May not go to the doctor on a regular basis or have access and ability to go to the doctor on a regular basis. And that, coupled with the changing face and the shifting paradigm within the epidemic to now a long-term illness, we've seen a bit of a silence and a complacency set in around the epidemic that has fueled stigma in a way that we never truly expected within the epidemic. I think by now, 30 years into HIV, we thought that as medications progressed, stigma would decrease. As more and more people were becoming infected, as more people would talk about it. But I think the more we worked and the harder we worked to try and educate communities about people living with HIV and not to be afraid of them, or that they were just like you and I, and now they can live a long and manageable life, we've also created a new stigma for those individuals who are living with HIV to be afraid to come out about their status. There's much more blame associated with HIV than other chronic illnesses. So while you look at the spectrum of chronic illness, and you look at things like cancer or diabetes, they're not quite the same, because if you look at someone with lung cancer versus someone with HIV, there's a bit more blame associated with the HIV status than with the individual with cancer, whether there's reason there or not.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests are Bonnie Harnish. She is with ARC Ohio, and also Tyler Termeer, also with ARC Ohio. He's a client and an employee there. There's a ribbon cutting for the AIDS Resource Center, Ohio's Medical Center, tonight at 5:30. For more information, at 4:30. Tonight, for more information, you can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the UN spotlight for Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi and Iran's Ahmadinejad will probe the latest messages from a region on edge. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 64 degrees, showers and thunderstorms off and on today, a high of 68. Mostly cloudy skies tonight, a low of 54 degrees. Sunshine and a high near 70 for Friday. And partly cloudy Friday night, a low of 47. Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. More information is available online at themontgomerysolution.com. And All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
When Rock Hudson died in 1985, he became one of AIDS' most famous victims, putting a face on the disease that had mostly been swept under the rug, and to no avail, and at the expense of untold numbers of people who have since been exposed and infected. The virus persists today without a cure or a vaccine. There's treatment, and perhaps more importantly, there is a community of support. Still with us is Bonnie Harnish and Tyler Termeer from the AIDS Resource Center. Joining us now is Erin Upchurch. She's a licensed social worker who has worked to raise awareness of the increasing impact of HIV/AIDS on women and girls. She founded the advocacy project Something on the Inside to help them. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Thank you. Hello.
So why a special project for women and girls?
It started out of, I actually started out doing case management at the Clements AIDS Task Force before it was ARC. And helped to author a grant that focused on women, low-income women living with HIV and AIDS. And aside from always being interested in women's issues, being able to work with these women one-on-one and to see how they are less served often. Sometimes the stigma is greater. There are different issues that women deal with and there didn't seem to be a great voice behind that. And so to really wanted to raise that awareness, increase prevention efforts, and then really empower women to have a good quality of life and to focus on their children, too.
You say women and girls,
yes.
Specifically. Girls,
yes.
Are at great risk.
Absolutely. When I think of girls, I often think of adolescent girls, but I think it's important, being the parent of a daughter, you know, starting early with young girls and talking about their bodies and empowering them to stand up for themselves and how to have that self-confidence. So when it comes to conversations about sex and safer sex, they feel comfortable already having those conversations to protect themselves and to make good decisions.
To our listeners, if you have a story to tell, we've come a long way in 30 years and some things haven't changed. But we have come a long way, and a lot of it has to do with community support. It's good to remember, though, what it used to be like so it's never repeated. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page, too, if you'd like. Omega in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Omega.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're a physician?
I am a physician.
Okay, and you wanted to talk about your cousin. Tell us.
Yes. Back in 92, 93, my cousin, who was maybe 16 or 17 at the time, African-American, heterosexual, was involved in a sexual relationship with an African-American male. He was a hemophiliac, and he was HIV positive. He didn't disclose his status to her, and she subsequently contracted the virus and developed AIDS. She died within 2 years of her diagnosis. I can't tell you the stigma that was attached to her diagnosis. Even from our family, there was some embarrassment, there was some shame from her diagnosis. Obviously, we were devastated. At first, no one wanted to really talk about it. But then we talked about it, and her being young, being headstrong, and also not, you know, being aware of her mortality, she refused to take her medicine, and so I believe that led to her her early death. But as far as the neighborhood, you know, our friends, our family, the stigma attached to it, people, you know, didn't want to talk about it. No, not in our community.
And your community, how would you describe what your community was or is?
African-American community, you know, blue collar, I would say lower middle class, lower class. I'm actually from the greater Columbus area. Mm-hmm. I went to Mifflin High School over there near Easton. And it happened when we were all young.
That's an interesting combination of circumstance in a way, because Tyler, you were talking earlier about marginalized groups that won't in general would tend not to go get health care taken care of anyway, mm-hmm. In general. And then we got the African-American community, which has this layer of stigma and absence of conversation about it still. So some things haven't changed a whole bunch, huh, Omega?
Not really, and also volunteer at a clinic, and I see, you know, young, not just African-American women coming in, but, you know, young, all races. And
right, and then there's that youth thing that we're never going to die, right?
Now the, you know, what we considered a home run as far as, like, sexual experiences back in the 90s, that's like first base now.
Right. Yeah. They're getting started so much younger.
So much younger, and it's I just wanted to also ask if anyone could speak to, I know the newer cases of HIV are among African-American women. And I wanted to know if anyone could speak to the down-low culture in the African-American community, if you're familiar with that.
The down-low culture, yeah, we have talked about it before on the show. Tyler, Aaron?
Yeah, I'll speak to that. Okay. A couple of things. You mentioned about women in the African-American community, and we know that AIDS is the number one killer for women ages 25 to 34 in the African-American community. And we know that black women are affected disproportionately, and then as Latino women, and that kind of goes down. And so I think
12 times higher than compared to white females.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, your story just kind of puts a face to the numbers that we know. In terms of the down-low culture, I sometimes kind of, you know, cringe at that because it implies that people are hiding things. And yes, folks are. And it's all wrapped up with the stigma and the silence and not wanting to talk. And I think that as a society, as a culture, a black culture, we can do a better job at being open-minded and accepting people of all different, you know, preferences, orientations and relationships. And that will remove some of that silence and shame around that. And I think that's where we start, that's with these real conversations. And when we use phrases like down-low culture, we're assigning blame to people. Often, I think it just further stigmatizes behaviors, further stigmatizes, you know, people who are HIV positive. And I think we need to do a better job talking about that. And go ahead, Tyler.
Tyler?
Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, I completely agree, Aaron. I feel like we had this this implosion of this conversation around the down low many years ago. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I struggle with around that conversation is that if we're going to talk about the down low, then let's not place blame on any one race or one population, mm-hmm. because it's really a phenomenon that happens everywhere, among every race. HIV now is a disease that I think for such a long time has been placed within a very specific community. It's actually a bit relevant that we talk about it today. Today is actually National Gay Men's HIV AIDS Awareness Day in the country. And we have for so long created these silos within the HIV community of trying to create resources for various populations and to try and figure out, you know, what's the cause that this one population is being infected more than others? But in a time when resources are really shrinking, and in a time when infections continue to increase, I think as a person now living with HIV for the last 9 years, what I would love to see is a day where we could sit as an HIV community, as a community at large, and start to talk about how we unite all as one and begin to address HIV as a domestic epidemic and not the epidemic among gay men, not the epidemic mm-hmm. among women, but an epidemic that is now not discriminating by age, by race, or gender, but an epidemic that has taken a stronghold on our country, and that we are fortunately in a time and a place where we have the ability through education and through advances in medical technology to stop the virus in its tracks. No, we don't have a cure, but we have the we have the ability and the knowledge. Last year alone, one of the scientific breakthroughs of the year, noted by Time magazine, was a clinical trial that showed that individuals who enter into care and treatment early, who start taking their medication and remain adherent to their medications, are 96% less likely to transmit the virus to other individuals. So if we can get individuals, if we can reduce the stigma, if we can stop the hatred, the homophobia, the transphobia, and unite as a community and provide a conversation that is equitable among all groups, get people into care and treatment once they've been tested and get everyone to know their status, then we can stop this epidemic.
And the, I guess the idea is that the ARC, Ohio's medical center, is a step in that direction where it brings a lot of people under one roof. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and there's a ribbon cutting for the ARC, Ohio's Medical Center, tonight at 4:30. For more information, go to WOSU.org/allsides. We want to hear your story, too. By the way, Omega, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Want to hear your story? You know, there was a day when we didn't even have programs like this. So if you remember those days, it's always good to remember them and recall them because it helps us from repeating them in the future. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bonnie Harnish of ARC, Ohio, you wanted to say something?
Well, just adding to what Tyler is saying and Aaron, that the business of stigma has to do with blaming the person. And I think that we have to understand that HIV destroys relationships and HIV destroys trust, and it leads to things perhaps like where there's deception in a relationship and about something like an infection. But the piece that I think we haven't spoken to yet is mental health. And I think that HIV can really, really undermine a person's self-esteem, a person's sense of identity, of what they can accomplish in their life and what they want to accomplish what for their children. And a lot of those things get so undermined that there's almost continuous need for some mental health treatment to be an ongoing piece and not be something like that only the really sick ones, you know, need the therapy, that everybody get that support. And that's one of the things I'm very pleased about at the clinic, is that we're going to be able to do mental health treatment on site.
And like Tyler said, you know, at the longer people live, the longer you're dealing with HIV, AIDS, and the other things that come along with it. And mental health, as you mentioned, certainly is one of those things. Erin, did you want to say something?
Well, sure. I just wanted to kind of add with the mental health piece is often folks will say, well, I never had an issue with mental health before I was diagnosed. And then there's a stigma around mental health that gets added to it. But often because of the stigma, because of the shame, because of lack of resources, lack of ability to provide for themselves, people do begin to isolate and there is a depression that comes along with it. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that and to label it, to name it, and to not be ashamed of that, and to take care of your whole self.
I think we're also dealing with a group of individuals, especially those who were diagnosed early on and survived, who are now dealing with a phenomenon that we never expected, which is second stage grief. I mean, you went from thinking you were not going to live and making peace with that. And now you're faced with a whole new chance to live a second portion of your life. But you're perhaps trapped in a system where you don't know how to get off of disability. You can't return to the workforce. You stopped your education. You stopped your career path.
Interesting.
And now you're
and
trying
you've arrested
to
the disease,
life.
But you haven't. Your life hasn't caught
your
up
life
with
was
that.
Put on hold.
Well, your identity has changed, too. I mean, you went from being a person who was dying to somebody who's living, but because you may have stopped your career path or, you know, education or relationships changed.
To take care of yourself.
Right. It's who am I now? I'm this person. I'm not just surviving. I'm living. And so what does that mean for me now?
Without allowing it to define completely who you are as an individual and being able to acknowledge that HIV is just a piece of who you are, which is a really hard concept for people to grasp.
Andrea, are you there?
Oh, yep.
Hi, you're on the air. You said you saw on the Short North that they're putting a new testing site in, right?
Oh, yeah. I am so excited. I saw a sign there probably in the past, like, 6 months saying it's going to be, like, a thrift store and, like, an HIV-AIDS testing site. I really wanted to know. Like, I really have no clue how that started or if you just had any information.
So this is in addition to the ARC, Ohio's Medical Center. Tyler, do you know about this?
Yeah, so there's a California-based a provider called the AIDS Healthcare Foundation that is coming into the Ohio community at some point. They did put up a sign at the corner there of High and Fifth and announcing that they'd be opening a thrift store and pharmacy. And, you know, I think that overall we are, as a community, always looking for the best options for our clients to have the best and most optimal care possible, which I think is why we're so excited as an agency at the AIDS Resource Center Ohio to be opening our medical center and pharmacy this mm-hmm. evening, because we already have a strong commitment to the community. We've been here now as three organizations, the Columbus AIDS Task Force, AIDS Resource Center Ohio, and the Ohio AIDS Coalition, all merged into one organization, really leading the way in the fight against HIV and AIDS in the Ohio community.
That must have been quite an exercise, merging all those groups, I would imagine, just knowing about organizational differences. Andrea, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Emmanuel in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Anna. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Very good topic. Tango, you're not doing politics today.
Oh, come on. You know I'm a junkie. Go on.
I wanted to know if there any information if the churches are now open to talk about this in the church. Because, you know, religious groups has really not embrace talking about it in the church because they're against premarital sex. So is there anything that the church is doing right now about it?
That's a good question, because for a lot of people, that's their community, and that's the center of their community.
Anyone? Right. I mean, I think that some... It depends on the church,
yeah, absolutely.
and it depends on the pastor or the preacher or the minister who is running that church and their willingness and commitment to serving all communities. I think a great example on the national level, actually, the National Association of People with AIDS, which I'm currently their board chair, we just held a prayer breakfast at a church this week for gay men in recognition of today's National Gay Men's HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. But also through one of the programs of AIDS Resource Center Ohio, the Greater Columbus Empowerment Center, they've been working really hard to establish ties within the community, specifically the African-American community, for African-American and Latino gay men or same gender loving men in the area, and recognizing that communities of color have that stronger commitment and that stronger tie to religion, and that if we're really going to combat the epidemic within those communities, that religion has to have an equal place at the planning table for both prevention, care, and treatment of our people.
And I know that that is a discussion they're having in that community, because they've talked about it on the show. Emmanuel, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Anna.
Take care. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to tell your story. Do you remember what it used to be like? It's always good to think about that as we move forward with the HIV/AIDS issue in this country. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Erin, before we take off for a quick break, I wanted to ask you, Erin Upchurch, about the name of your organization, Something on the Inside. It's an advocacy project for women
sure.
and girls. It's called Something on the Inside. What's that about?
Well, obviously, it's a play on words of, you know, acknowledging that HIV is something on the inside of someone, and it's not something you can see by looking at a person. And so to kind of acknowledge that. But then, as Tyler mentioned, it's just a piece of who people are. And when working with women, women are so many things and have so many identities and labels and strengths. And so there's so much more in there. And the project itself it's a creative project. And so the first year we did an art show where the artists actually met with women who were living with HIV and told their story and then did artwork to kind of inspired by their stories. And so to really, you know, show light on the disease, how it's impacted women, but to also acknowledge that the women are so much more, and there's so much more on the inside of them, and that needs to be celebrated.
We're going to say goodbye to you, but thank you so much for joining us, Erin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Erin Upchurch, social worker and founder of the AIDS advocacy project, Something on the Inside. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm General Manager Tom Ryland, congratulating the WOSU News Team for being named the best radio news operation in Ohio by the Society of Professional Journalists for the third year in a row.
The first responding officers were confronted by lions, tigers, a grizzly bear.
She's a single mom with four children. She works as a part-time medical assistant. She makes only $1,300 a month.
Hear more from our news team on 89.7 NPR News and at our award-winning website, WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of the latest from TEDx 2012. Stay with us from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. 65 degrees, showers and thunderstorms likely off and on throughout the day today. It should be tapering off later this afternoon, a high of 68. Clouds for tonight, a low of 54 degrees. Mostly sunny for Friday and a high of 69. Support for 89.7 comes from Dental Reflections Dublin, a multi-specialty dental practice for the whole family. Pediatric specialist Dr. Hackman and general dentist Dr. Asani give details about their range of services online at dentalreflections-dublin.com or by phone at 799-5576. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
More than 33 million people are currently living with HIV/AIDS around the world, including 1.2 million Americans. It's estimated someone is diagnosed every 9.5 minutes here in the United States and every 22 hours in the city of Columbus. That's according to the AIDS.gov. Still with us is registered nurse Bonnie Harnish from ARC Ohio, along with client and employee Tyler Tremere. Also joining us now is Dr. Kimberly Bates, director of the FACES Clinic for Children and Families with HIV/AIDS at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bates.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
A lot of us still remember the story of Ryan White, the teenager from Kokomo, Indiana. He became a national poster child for HIV/AIDS in the United States after being expelled from middle school because of his infection. And I was wondering about what do we know about the rate of infection among children these days? And heaven help us, I hope those days are over that Ryan had to suffer through.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the great things about the HIV epidemic in youth is that we've had some wonderful successes as it pertains to maternal to child transmission. So when you look at pregnant moms who are HIV positive, you know, if they are enrolled in care, if they're maintained in care, and if they take antiretroviral medications during their pregnancy, the chances that their child will be born with HIV is very low, you know, less than 2%. So, you know, that is an absolute success when it comes to pediatric HIV.
And how does treatment differ for children and adults?
You know, there really isn't much difference in treatment. There are some medications that we don't use in children just because they're not approved to use in children, but many of the medications that we use are used in all age groups. I think the bigger issue for us isn't necessarily how do we treat our children who are infected. It's a lot more how we identify the youth who are becoming behaviorally infected, which is a new upswing for us both nationwide as well as here locally in Columbus.
I wondered when we're talking about kids, what are we really talking about, adolescents?
Yeah, so, you know, so we certainly have our infants who are exposed through maternal HIV exposure, but certainly the uptake that we've seen in our program has been in our adolescents and young adults. So in that sort of 15 to 25 age range, mm-hmm. We've definitely seen a large increase in those in the number of infected youth, particularly among our MSM youth.
We were talking earlier about the psychological aspects of this, not only just of learning about it in general and having the condition, but, you know, there may be mental health issues on top of that anyway. I was wondering, how do you explain to a child this sort of disease, particularly given what Aaron Upchurch was saying earlier, and we were talking about as well, that there's no fear. They're fearless. They think they're never going to die. How do you explain it to them?
Yeah, you know, I think that is one of the toughest things that we have with our youth. That is one of the reasons why it's more difficult to keep youth in care, just because it's not something that tangibly right now affects them. You know, many of them may get their diagnosis, whether they're perinatally infected and find out in their you know, adolescent, pre-adolescent age range that they actually have this infection, or if they're behaviorally infected, it's still nothing that necessarily touches them and changes how they live their life. And so I think we're no different than lots of other programs that deal with kids with chronic illness, getting them to understand the importance of taking care of yourself today to keep you healthy tomorrow. It is something that adolescents are not built to do. That part of their brain isn't really developed yet to think more forward about what their life is going to be like. So we spend a lot of time educating the patients, educating the parents, sometimes educating schools, family members.
Still.
One of the things that I always say is that, you know, all of the messaging that was there 15, 20 years ago, these kids weren't around then. They didn't get it. And so we need to continue to educate families and patients and school systems and communities about the impact of HIV and what that means to an HIV-infected youth.
Charles in Wilmington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hello.
So you live in a rural area.
Yes, I do, and I've had HIV since 1995, and I see that there's a difference in the type of care and services that people receive. People that live in Columbus have access. They have access to, it seems to me, to unlimited resources. Where somebody like myself, I don't drive. I'm on disability. I live alone. And it seemed to me that I don't really have it. I can't live out here in the rural areas no more. I have to, if I wanted to take care of my mind and my health in the best way, I need to get to a city. I mean, there's just nothing out here or nothing available. And I, like myself, I'm thinking, seriously thinking about moving to Columbus just to have to be available to the more services and more opportunities to deal with this. And I'd just like to know what your panel thinks on that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Charles, for the call. Tyler Tremere?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say that you weren't right, but unfortunately, it's the case. We actively know that people who live in more rural parts of Ohio and in more rural parts anywhere in the country continue to have issues in accessing the same level of care as those who live in bigger cities. Some of that has to do with just the way that federal and state dollars fund services around the state. But there's also a large piece of that has to go back to the conversation we were having earlier in the hour around stigma. There are still a lot of providers around the country who aren't willing to see HIV positive patients. So we work very closely with the Ohio Department of Health to try and bring on new Ryan White providers around the state, especially in rural parts of the state, so that clients have options, and also trying to figure out the best ways to get folks to their appointments. Unfortunately, the issues that exist, especially for those in rural parts of the state, transportation being a huge one,
right,
continue to be a problem, and things that we don't currently have adequate funding to support those types of ancillary services to get folks to their appointments. I do think, however, if I'm a bit optimistic here, that the shift that we could potentially see at the intersection of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy and the Affordable Care Act in the United States, but the trickle-down that we'll begin to see in states will make a difference for people.
Because these will be people that were falling through the cracks before.
people who are falling through the cracks, but there'll be incentives for community-based clinics and providers all over the country to start seeing additional patients. The Medicaid program, should we decide as Ohio to expand our Medicaid program, which is still up in the air, so my political soapbox, go vote in November, please. It will make a difference for people living with HIV. I truly think that if we can expand our Medicaid program, if we can get people who don't currently have insurance coverage into care, and if we can redirect some of the dollars that we currently have through that expansion of the Medicaid program back to things like transportation, we can get those clients who are living with HIV in rural parts of the state to the care and treatment that they need.
Yes, Dr. Bates.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we absolutely see that in our population as well. It's actually why the FACES program actually has a broader reach than just Central Ohio. So we actually serve 43 separate counties in Ohio, including 19 Appalachian counties. So because we find that our patients who are from more rural counties just cannot find the care. And part of our family-centered focus is that we do see patients of all ages, so from infants down to patients who are as old as 65 and 70 with HIV, and we try to ensure that we've got transportation services for them to come to see us because of that stigma of being HIV infected and living in a small community where you may be afraid that other people in your community are going to know your diagnosis if you seek care close to home.
Bonnie Harnish from ARC Ohio, do you have any sense about how many of the clients there do come in from the rural areas, or any sense about, you know, to what extent people do end up having just to move to Columbus to get the services they need?
Well, I think that's a reality. It's certainly harder to get care in the rural areas.
True across the board.
Yeah, and particularly things like dental care and mental health, of course, are the worst. I have to say that the community of HIV care providers in Ohio is kind of uniquely joined, so that the safety net is stronger all the way out to the rural areas. Most of us, we have our funding. It's for broader areas, just like Dr. Bates was talking about. And FACES clinic has been working with CATF and ARC, and we don't duplicate things. We don't waste dollars. We're able to give more care to more people at a wider geographic area, and that's how we've tried to combat the problem, is work together and spread the resources as wide as we can.
Tyler Tremere?
Yeah, you know, I think you're exactly right, Bonnie. And one of the true benefits that I think came out of the large mergers that happened with AIDS service organizations in 2011 was the fact that we were not only able, as three service organizations in the state, able to unify and strengthen the program reach that we do have now, serving 62 counties through prevention, care, education and outreach, but all 88 counties throughout Ohio through our public policy and advocacy efforts, advocating for equity among all parts of the state, and then truly finding areas that we can collaborate with programs like FACES and those other parts of the state that we're not truing. We've created an even stronger community through this merger process.
Desiree from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I was calling because I have a question. I have a brother who passed away of AIDS, and my biggest thing is this. I want to know, I see all this high teen pregnancies and all that going on right now, and, you know, it's not just babies that, you know, we're getting, but, I mean, they're not, you know, looking at AIDS, and, you know, they can catch AIDS and all this stuff, and have anything out there that we are educating our young people?
Yeah, well, we've been talking about that. Tyler?
Yeah, so I think it remains a bit of a challenge. So Ohio has unfortunately had one of the highest teen pregnancy rates for a very long time. We at AIDS Resource Center Ohio, at other service organizations, both in education and in HIV care, have been working for a long time throughout the epidemic to try and get into schools and to educate our young people about the epidemic. But I do believe that part of the challenge is that that's going to take a full community response, and all parts of communities, whether you have children or not, advocating for a comprehensive approach to sexuality education in schools. Because right now there are still huge pockets throughout Ohio that are teaching abstinence only until marriage education, of which isn't relevant to all parts of all populations. If you can't get married in Ohio, what message does that send to our LGBT youth throughout, who are one of the populations most impacted by this disease?
And do you mind if
sure,
I comment?
Sure, Dr. Bates, go ahead. Yeah.
So, you know, that's been a real focus for us here at FACES, and probably about two and a half years ago, we formally started an outreach program because we realized for every teen who walked into our clinic, we were probably missing a large number who were HIV infected and didn't know their status, and another large number who were at risk of HIV infection. So we frequently, you know, we certainly do education and testing for some of the more, you know, high-risk groups, such as, you know, kids who are at Buckeye Ranch for, you know, behavioral issues and runaway youth and those types of things. But we've started doing even more outreach in sort of non-traditional ways to reach youth. So we recently did a educational HIV session at the 4-H Youth Conference, and we've also participated with Mount Hermon at their youth conference as well, doing HIV education.
Dr. Kimberly Bates, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Kimberly Bates, Director of FACES at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Also, Bonnie Harnish, registered nurse with ARC Ohio. Bonnie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Tyler Tremere. Tyler, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome, Ann. Thanks for having us.
Tyler's also with ARC. They're having their grand opening of their medical center tonight in the Short North at 4:30. Go to our website at wosu.org/allsides for more information. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.